not in lieu, but certainly because of all that's happening in the news, I would talk to you about some of the emotional or psychological aspects of all that's taking place, both in the lives of people who are victims and in the lives or life of people who set fires. And I thought that I would talk to you about disorders of impulse control. And because this is the classification, I think you'll find, of the individual who is setting these terrible, tragic fires. And I thought I would talk to you about disorders of impulse control, and they're essentially of two types. Anyone who essentially has a problem with impulse control will fall into one of really two or three types. One is a failure to resist an impulse, a failure to resist a drive or a temptation to perform some kind of behavior or act that is harmful to the individual and perhaps to other people. There may or may not be a conscious resistance to the impulse. I mean, the act may or not be premeditated or may not even be planned. But once the thought is entered into, there is an absolute, there is no resistance to acting out the thought. There is just absolutely no control. Now, impulse control disorders can also be of a second type. There is an increasing sense of tension before committing the acts. That's right. Some of these features are the failure to resist the impulse, and then secondly, an increasing tension before committing the act that I have talked about oftentimes mirrors kleptomania, or as you may know it, shoplifting. There is that failure to resist an impulse. There is an increasing tension before committing the act. And then thirdly, there is an experience of either pleasure, gratification, or release at the time of committing that particular act. The act is egosystonic, which means that it is the immediate conscious wish of the individual. It is consistent with the individual. It's not repugnant. It's not something that they have a great deal of shame or regret. However, after following through with the act, there may or may not be some genuine guilt, self-reproach, or regret, but it doesn't have to be. So you will find that these impulse control problems come in several categories. One would be pathological gambling, whereas the person just continues to gamble regardless and irrespective of their ability to regardless of their ability to sustain losses financially. There's this pathological gambling, which is part of the impulse control. There is kleptomania, as you know it, as shoplifting. There's the intermittent and/or isolated explosive disorder, where people absolutely have they just explode, hostility. And then there's the pyromania, which we are talking about here, the pyromania. And the pyromania is an essential diagnosis that's given to people who have recurrent failure to resist the impulse to set fires. And people who have this intense fascination with setting fires and seeing them burn. Now, before the fire setter begins, before setting the fire, the individual will experience, as I was saying just a moment ago, a buildup of tension. Now, the buildup of tension may come from several sources. It can come directly from the idea of setting the fire, or it can come from a whole host of other areas in one's life that one gets acted out by the setting of the fires. If you want to stay on the line, stay on the program, listen to what I have to say in my opening comments. I'd like to talk more about this pyromania, the setting of fires, and then in the news as we progress along in the days and weeks and months ahead, you may find that the person that they find very much fits this particular diagnosis. Stay with me. My name is John Jolliffe. Mr. Angelov, and we are talking about disorders of impulse control, oftentimes discussed as pathological gambling, isolated and intermittent explosive problems with hostility, kleptomania, and of course we're talking about pyromania, the setting of fires. And I said the essential feature is this reoccurring failure to resist impulses, and therefore there's this fascination with setting fires and seeing them burn. there is a profile. You must understand that when you have these kinds of man-made tragedies, some of them are natural tragedies. You know, there are earthquakes and there are lightning strikes and there are various kinds of storms and the like. And that's one thing. But when you find that these are man-made, when there has been some kind of involvement with a part of a shooter, in some way a rapist, in some way a pyromaniac, you're going to find that there is a profile, there is a history, there is a family of origin context that will start becoming very clear in terms of what goes on. And I just want to tell you these things so that you can be reading the newspapers, listening to the news, and be aware in the future when they finally find this individual. Because, after all, I think in the news I was reading that he had written a letter to the fire department, one of these people. I don't know how many of these fires are actually set. I heard in some cases there are 14 separate fires that were set by arsonists, or maybe one of several arsonists. Tragic Malibu and expanding a fire there to the Pacific Palisades and beyond was set by someone. But there is a profile as to this individual, and I just want to give you this background so that you might better able to understand this. But let me give you also some phone numbers if you'd like, or a phone number if you'd like to call and talk about this situation. Maybe you've had difficulties with impulse control, maybe not with pyromania, setting fires, but maybe of some other kind. I want to, and maybe you have some experiences also in terms of the last week of what's happened both in Southern California and Malibu area and Laguna and San Diego. If you'd like to call, let me give you a toll-free number, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about some of the things that happen to victims in terms of some of the psychological, emotional complications you may find from fires and from disasters, natural and man-made, and that you might read about and hear about in the news to come. But before setting these fires, these pyromaniacs, and let me spell it for you, it's P-Y-R-O-M-A-N-I-A, mania, pyromania. Before setting these fires, these individuals will experience a buildup of tension. Now, it may be tension that comes from a life in general. There may be a tremendous amount of psychosocial stressors in their life. It could come from home, it could come from their jobs, it could come from any number of interpersonal relationships. Or it can come from the idea of setting fires. There's a fascination with fire. There may be a fascination because fires seem to symbolize pain, heat, power. And so there's a fascination with whatever it represents, or in fact, the fire. And once the fire is underway, that person, men or women, will experience an intense pleasure or a sense of release from the tension. It's much like the sexual platform that you've read about or heard about. This inevitability that it's going to happen, you know, and then afterwards there is that intense pleasure or release. And that's why I've told you that people who are pyromaniacs, people who set fires, the arsonists, often have some psychosocial, psychosexual disturbances and conflicts. And although the fire setting results from the failure to resist an impulse, there may be considerable advanced preparation for starting the fire, and the individual may leave many obvious clues, as in the case of this particular one that had written the fire department weeks before, talking about setting the big fires, meeting fire with fire. Oftentimes you'll find that people who are emotionally disturbed also take on a religious flair. I remember the Manson family and the letters regarding Sharon Tate's death. But they'll also quote scripture, because the disturbances in conduct and disturbances emotionally and mentally oftentimes take on a rather grandiose flavor, such as cleaning the world for God and things like that. Individuals with this impulse disorder are often recognized as regular watchers at fires in neighborhoods, and they frequently set off of fire alarms, and they show interest in firefighting paraphernalia and the like. And this is one of the things that tips people off that you might have a pyromaniac on your hands. they have this intense interest. They're watchers. They're at every neighborhood fire. They're the ones who have their fingerprints on the fire alarm, and they say, "I didn't do it." They always show up to the community and local, service events. You know, where the fire department and the police department have their firefighting and the police paraphernalia on display. They may be indifferent to the consequences of the fire for life or for property, and they can also get great satisfaction from any resulting destruction, because in some way they had a chance at fame. You know, they are the author. You know, and this whole religious idea that no one, gives life or takes it away except God himself. Alcoholic intoxication, psychosexual dysfunction, lower than average IQ, and chronic personal frustration, you know, resentment of authority figures are among the associated features. And cases have been described in which the individual was actually sexually aroused by fires. You can read about more of this in what they call the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders and the DSM-3 and 4 as well. There's a lot written on pyromania. The age of onset for pyromania seems to usually be in childhood. When it's in adolescence, when it's later starting, or when it's in adulthood, the fire setting tends to be more deliberately destructive, tends to be much more grandiose. With children, many children play with matches, right? We all, at one time or another, learned how matches work, and we like watching it, maybe starting a fire in Boy Scouts and all of that kind of thing, kindling and like. So it's not a normal or unnatural that children play with matches and things like that. It's when there seems to be an inordinate, and I'm talking about an extreme fascination with not only that, but with maybe firefighting paraphernalia, fire alarms, always showing up at fires, then you want to be concerned. Now, when I was a young child, we used to play fire trucks and firemen. We used to have a little red wagon. We'd put a garden hose in it, and we'd chase down and follow. We had a fire department down the street from our house. We'd run to the fire. Of course, we'd never get there because we were running on our little feet, but we imagined ourselves to be fire people, and we played cowboys and Indians, and we played shoot 'em up army people, and we played firemen. It's when it begins to be a fascination, it begins to preoccupy and becomes an obsession, that's when you have to be concerned. And it's interesting that this impulse control problem is diagnosed far more commonly in men than it ever is in women. So let's talk about some of these interesting things that are happening in the news. Sad, but interesting and fascinating in a sense, because people are interesting and fascinating. We're going to talk, if you'd like to talk, toll-free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. This is John Jolliffe, and we are talking about the character and maybe the characterological conditions of somebody who might set a fire. There is a lot of interesting research on pyromania and certainly the personality characteristics of people who have this impulse control problem, and it is very similar to kleptomania and impulse control problems as it relates to explosive disorders and alike, and the pathological gambling and alike. Now, so you may not have thought that. You may not have thought that there's anything similar to this, but let me tell you something. Differences are not as important as similarities. And, for instance, somebody who's doing heroin, someone who's doing animal tranquilizers, someone who's doing cocaine, you know, someone who's doing some of the, street drugs, crack and the like, there are differences, of course, but the similarities are far more important than the differences. And pathological, pathological gambling, kleptomania, pyromania, all of those things are far more similar than they are different. Now, where pathological gambling, you're saying, well, he's only injuring or she's only injuring one particular individual, that's himself. Well, everybody's affected, everybody in the family, anybody who works for the individual who owns the company who has the pathological gambling will finally find themselves out of work. So anytime you have an impulse control problem, it is mass destruction. intermittent and explosive disorders, where you have violent episodes, chronic or intermittent, you're going to devastate lots of people. You can't just hit someone, shoot someone, create mass destruction of one sort or another without everyone being affected in some way. And of course, in pyromania, as we see in the last 2 weeks, this particular impulse control problem is a great destruction. In the conduct disorders, or the antisocial personality disorders, you will find that there is a deliberate setting, a deliberate act. When you have a conduct disorder problem, when people are just anti-establishment, where you have an antisocial, where people are socially anti-people, where they feel like they have unlimited power and are entitled to do whatever they wish to anybody they like at any time they wish. And certainly the, you know, incendiary acts of sabotage carried out by political extremists, you know, these paid tortures, these fire setting occurs. In all of those personality types, it's always carried out as a deliberate act rather than a failure to resist an impulse. And that's what's true of pyromaniacs, these fire setters like this. These are not political extremists. These people have a failure to resist an impulse. You know, you may have kiddingly said at one time or another, who hasn't, that I had to just stop work and go rob a bank, or it certainly would be a lot easier to be a crook and just steal from the company or from somebody else. But it's usually, you know, it's usually passed off as just being a statement in frustration or some gallows humor. It's never acted upon. How many times you've thought all of these things, or I could kill myself, or whatever. We all have these thoughts at times of one sort or another. I could just leave everything and go to Tahiti. But to the person who has an impulse control problem, they have a failure to resist that impulse, that impulsive thought, that idea that comes to the mind. They have to act it out. And for the pyromaniac, this is more about fires than anything else. And in schizophrenia, if you think that these fire setters, these arsonists, are schizophrenics, understand this. Fire setting that's done by people with schizophrenia, psychotic disorder, are usually in response to a delusion or a hallucination. They're not carried out all that well, and usually are discovered as they buy the gasoline and stick the cloth in the hole, and they say, "Yeah, I'm going to blow up all these people, and they can't have sex with me from the moon," you know, things like that. So they're usually found out. There is a symptomatology, there is a etiology, there is certainly a pathology that goes with this kind of thing. People typically have said, well, these fire setters are crazy. These are crazy people. Well, they are in a sense, but they aren't in a sense either. It's not crazy to be unable to resist an impulse. It is certainly a disorder of conduct. It is certainly a conduct disorder. And it's certainly something that needs our attention. But when you're better informed and when you begin to understand these things, certainly you are better able to talk and get the kind of referral and the kind of treatment for people who desperately need our help. And how many people who create mass destruction later in life were either poorly diagnosed or undiagnosed by teachers and pastors and counselors and parents and things like that? And that's one of the reasons we do the program, Issues of Life, is so that you can be better informed. You can develop libraries of tapes. You can, you know, if we're going to do better at taking care of our communities and our families and our very lives, you have to be informed. I mean, there's just nothing that will ever replace information and knowledge. And so we offer this program to you for that reason. But also, I must tell you, we need your support. Let me transition into talking to you about our need. We've been here for yours, and certainly it's been a pleasure to bring you these broadcasts. But unless we continue to receive your financial support, and that's each and every one of you doing a little part, then that will make the big part go very smoothly. But we can't continue without your support. So please remember the Issues of Life in your prayers and in your financial giving. You can write to us. We have a nonprofit foundation. You can write to us at the Issues of Life, Post Office Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. And that would be a great encouragement to us and of a great support, because we do, in order to continue, need your support. You need to also get on the mailing list so that we can let you know where I may be speaking, or other kinds of tools or educational tools that are available for you, both seminars. We're doing a seminar this coming Saturday by that, just by, maybe not by coincidence, but by design. We're doing a seminar November 6th, this coming Saturday, at the Mandalay Beach Resort in Oxnard. And the subject of that seminar is traditional transitions. We all go through transitions, and certainly we're going through one now as it relates to so many people who have been evacuated. And as we look at the landscape, and as we think about how dangerous and how precarious our lives really are, we are now in a sense of disenchantment. It's disenchanting. You know, we had an enchanting idea that if you were a nice person and you paid your taxes and you treated everyone nicely, then, you know, bad things wouldn't happen to good people. But we know that things like that do happen, and we need to wake up to that. And so you may find yourself disenchanted by Southern California, by men, by women, by what goes on. You'll see new legislation as a result of these fires, and you'll learn about the old legislation that in some way inhibited the smooth fighting, the administration of these fires. We're handicapped by, you know, archaic legislation. And so you're going to be disenchanted, but this is all about a transition you're going through, and we're going to be talking this Saturday about transitions. And you need to understand transitions because they're such a big part of life. I mean, they're a huge part of life. There are things that are coming to an end, and before a new beginning begins, there is this middle ground, this very formless, chaotic, dark period in your life where you don't know which way's up. And yet out of that, like out of the ashes of the old, new life begins. But you need to understand what to do. So if you'd like to come, we'd love to have you. You need to call this phone number, 1-800-541-9959. That's 1-800-541-9959 to get your tickets for this Saturday, November 6th, from 9 o'clock to noon in Oxnard at the Mandalay Beach Resort. It'll be a three-hour seminar from 9 to noon. I'm going to take some time off right now for the next half hour. We're going to run a tape. I know most of you are probably watching TV or concerned about what's happening with friends and like. So we'll be running a tape of a previous show, and I'll talk with you tomorrow, beginning at 4 o'clock. All right?